from KQED.
From KQED Public Radio in San Francisco, I'm Michael Krasny. Coming up on Forum this morning, the city of Oakland has suffered a spate of violence recently, including 7 people killed in just 7 days earlier this month. We'll discuss ways to combat the violence with Oakland's police chief, residents, experts, and listeners. How is the city doing at keeping residents safe? Forum is next. Join us after this. From KQED Public Radio in San Francisco, I'm Michael Krasny. Good morning and welcome to this morning's Forum program. Everyone from all sides of the political spectrum seems to agree that Oakland law enforcement is terribly understaffed. Yet with 7 killings in the course of 7 days earlier this month and sprees of violent crime and police response time increasing, Oakland continues to suffer more crime and violence while the overall number of crimes nationwide continues to go down. What can be done about the scourge of homicides and the ongoing surges in crime in Oakland? And how can Oakland be made safer? We take up those crucial questions in this morning's opening Forum Hour. And first, we want to bring Tamaralyn Drummond on. She's a columnist of the Oakland Tribune who has been writing about and who has certainly expressed, as many have in Oakland, a lot of deep concern over escalating violence. Tamaralyn Drummond, good to have you with us on Forum. Good morning.
Oh, thank you. Good morning to you. And thanks a lot for having me on.
Well, I wanted to have you on initially because I wanted to sort of go right at things here. You've been pretty critical of the city council and pretty critical specific members of the city council. What aren't they doing that they should be doing?
Well, the problem here is, and I really don't want to get into kind of leveling blame, but when you've got this kind of problem, it really is something that is beyond any particular individual, but certainly as elected officials whose charge is, you know, one of the main charges is to maintain the public safety, you have got to come up with a comprehensive strategy for addressing the violence in Oakland. And it's got to be something that has both short and long-term benchmarks and specific benchmarks and targets for violence reduction.
Well, of course, Mayor Kwan and Chief Jordan have been very strong on this 100 block program, and they've talked about it creating more trust and safety in especially that high crime area where those 100 blocks have been as the hotspot located. You feel it's not enough at this point? It's not comprehensive by any means, so therefore not enough?
The problem with the 100 block plan all along was that it was very vague, and it essentially dealt with hotspot policing tactics that the department had already been doing all along. It talked about coordinating different social services into a particular area where the mayor said most of the violence was occurring. As it turned out, 90% of the homicides and shootings were not occurring in 5% of the city, as the mayor had initially reported. And as I know certainly Junius will talk about later based on their report, the violence was far more widespread. And so that raises the issue of, okay, if the violence is not concentrated in this very small location, what is the point of having a strategy that is so narrowly focused when, in fact, as we are all experiencing, the violence is much more widespread?
Well, when you put a limited number of police officers from a force in that 100-block area, doesn't it also increase the amount of crime that is going on elsewhere, although Chief Jordan, whom we'll talk to shortly, has said that there's not necessarily, from his perspective, any link between the two?
I know Chief has said that there is not any link between the two, and I don't know that there's any evidence that you can show a direct link, but certainly if you talk to people who live in the Oakland Hills, for example, where burglaries have escalated, and we look at some of the violent crime that is happening in other parts of the city, we do see that, in fact, the violence is not just located in that particular zone. And as far as residents and business people in the city, you know, what we're looking at are the overall numbers. And we are still on track for triple-digit homicides in the city. We still are seeing an increase in robberies. So the overall crime situation in the city remains, you know, extremely dire.
Tamara Drummond is with us. She's a columnist with the Oakland Tribune. And you've been, as I said, critical of many of the elected officials, and I know that you don't necessarily want to single them out. But let's talk about, just for a moment, your perspective with respect to Mayor Kwan, because you seem to certainly take her to task for a statement she made about nobody having to deal with violent crime more than she.
I believe that Mayor Kwan is working very hard. I think the problem is that there is a difference between, as the mayor does, receiving crime reports every day from the police chief, and I know it's got to be extremely difficult to inform or speak to families who have lost loved ones, but that is very different, having a direct experience of crime, than someone, say, who goes out in front of their house and sees one of the teenage kids bleeding to death on the doorstep. And I think that what really needs to happen in Oakland is we, first of all, before we can come up with any kind of solution, we have to start having an honest dialogue about, you know, around public safety. And one of the issues that has occurred here is that we are caught in this kind of ideological battle between one group that feels that we need to spend public safety money on more social programs, that if you just give people jobs, that somehow the violence will stop. And then we have another faction that feels that we should use our public safety money to put more police officers on the street. But the issue is, it's not an either-or proposition. You need a comprehensive public safety plan that is going to address both of those issues.
And
that just has not happened.
Again, Tamara Drummond, again, is a columnist for the Oakland Tribune with us by phone. She mentioned Junius Williams, and he's also with us by phone. And let me, first of all, before I go to Junius Williams, thank you, Tamara Drummond, for joining us on Forum this morning. I appreciate very much your being with us. And maybe get a final word from you about some of those San Quentin inmates that you spoke to that gave some advice.
Well, it's interesting. One of the most some of the most profound comments that I have gotten around this issue were from some of the lifers in San Quentin who I spoke to last week. And one of their observations was that in order to stop the violence really at the root, you have got to change behavior of the offenders on the street who are committing the crimes. And one of the problems is these folks have not been part of the conversation. The second thing is that the violence issue is so huge that we seem to be almost paralyzed by it. The problem is people want instant solutions, but that we're not really, as a community, willing to roll up our sleeves and do the work and look at some of these difficult issues and their core roots.
Again, I want to thank you for joining us this morning.
Thank you so much. Take care.
Tamara Drummond. And I mentioned Junius Williams is also with us. He is CEO of the Urban Strategies Council in Oakland. The focus of their work is to support youth, family, and community development as a means of building healthy, vibrant communities in order to reduce persistent poverty. Excuse me. Welcome, Junius Williams. Good to have you aboard on Forum.
Good morning, Michael.
Good morning. Well, what about the 100-block plan from your perspective and needing more police?
Well, with respect to the 100-block plan, as Tamerlan said, that it's not 100 blocks. The violent crimes, when you look at homicides and shooting, are much more dispersed across the flatland neighborhoods of Oakland. The underlying strategies, though, that the mayor is attempting to implement, I mean, some of them have a lot of merit. Some of them are evidence-based. Whether they're at the scale that they need to be to really impact the enormous level of violence is a question. As Tamerlan also said, the comprehensiveness of the strategies is really critical issue, given how widespread the violence is. And there are probably, the plan indicates, some short, mid, and long-term things that we need to be doing as a community that I'm not sure we've built the political will across all of the significant sectors and stakeholder groups in the community to really be working together in a coordinated fashion to attack the problem.
Well, one of the things that looms over this whole problem is there are too many guns out there.
far too many. And, you know, it's troublesome that in the 21st century, and I know there's a constitutional right to bear arms, but, you know, it's just an enormous problem. The availability and such a widespread basis of guns is fueling the use of them. And when you talk about younger and younger people who don't understand how lethal those weapons are and who haven't had the sort of values and character building that one needs to, you know, have that sort of thing, it's really a dangerous situation. And I think exacerbated by the fact that we are understaffed in the police department. And, you know, I never thought I would, you know, say this, because when the discussions were happening a couple years ago about needing to get the force to 1,200, you know, I was really resistant. But at 640 sworn officers, given the size of the city and the level of the problem, we need to do something about staffing up the police force, and so that they can do their jobs, both with respect to the traditional enforcement, but also with respect to trying to fully implement the community policing that we've had on the books for 20 years in this community and haven't really ever fully implemented it to produce the kind of results that other communities like San Jose have yielded from, you know, full implementation.
Now, speaking of other communities, now I know that you and others in Oakland who are concerned with this problem have been looking nationally. Programs like Lifeline and Unity Platform, Ceasefire, Princeton Initiative. I mean, there are a lot of programs that have at least shown to have results. What are you looking specifically at if any comprehensive plan should come into the picture that could be use in Oakland as a paradigm?
Well, I think both of the Lifelines, Lifelines to Healing, which is the national PICO initiative in a number of cities around the country that's based on the so-called Boston Miracle, where they went for a period of well over a year with no youth homicides. That, I think, is an important evidence-based sort of program that we need to implement in Oakland, and we need to implement it fully. We're doing some call-ins, but call-ins were only where the police bring in high-risk folks in terms of high risk for violence and try to get them to connect it to resources is only one component of the Ceasefire Lifeline strategy. There's also a lot of community building. There's a lot of supports and wraparound services to help folks transition out of, you know, the street life and to get them the sort of education, mental health, and other services and supports they need to get out of the life. The Unity Platform, developed in a number of cities across the country through the Prevention Institute, has a number of evidence-based practices and programs that communities that have adopted that platform and implemented it have realized some pretty significant reductions in violence. And it's the kind of comprehensive approach that I think Tamerlan was referring to, where you look at all of the aspects of what needs to happen to shift the culture in a community from violence to peace and safety.
Are we also talking, though, Junius Williams, about not only understaffing of police and lack of resources there, but also in terms of adjudication, prosecution, the whole process of bringing people in front of justice?
Yeah, and one of the problems I think that the police department faces in terms of the staffing, and it's not only the patrol officers, but it's having an adequate complement of investigators, of technicians, being able to do the forensics and lab work, having state-of-the-art data systems, So when we talk about what needs to happen on the enforcement side of the equation, we have a number of inadequacies at a community that hamper the ability when crimes do happen for the police department to be effective in bringing those who perpetrate the crimes to justice. And some folks argue that that's an important deterrent. If you know that the likelihood that you're going to be identified, arrested, and brought to justice, that it has a deterrent effect. Aside from that, though, I think there's a psychological issue for the families of victims of violence to, you know, have some certainty that we're doing all we can as a community when there are incidents of violence to make sure that they get some level of revolution by apprehension and prosecution.
And we are, in fact, going to talk with someone who has experienced that tragedy and lost a son to street violence in Oakland. But first, we want to go to Howard Jordan, who is Chief of Police of the Oakland Police Department. Chief, good to have you with us. Welcome.
Hey, good morning. I apologize for being late. I was at a lineup this morning.
Well, that's okay. I'm glad to have you here. And, in fact, the fact that you're here prompts me to also let listeners know that they can join us. In fact, let me give the toll-free number if you would like. Chief is going to be with us probably till the half hour, but if you'd like to get a question or comment in here in general, let me tell you how you can do that. Our toll-free number is 866-733-6786. You can also, of course, email us, forum@kqed.org, but the toll-free number, 866-733-6786, or go to our website and let us know what's on your mind by going to kqed.org/forum and clicking on this segment, and you can also post any questions or comments on our Facebook page. As I've said, and as many of us have been saying here this morning, Chief Jordan, it's terrible understaffing, and I know from your perspective it's been an ongoing formidable struggle to overcome that understaffing. Are there any bright lights ahead in terms of just the number of police out on the street or shifting things around so that people can feel that maybe there's more safety up ahead?
Yeah, actually, there's a number of bright lights that are ahead of us. Some lights are brighter than others, but I'll just give you a couple of some long-term and some short-term goals. Obviously, the city and the city council and the mayor and the city administrator made it made public safety a priority during this budget cycle, and have funded three police academies over the next year. So what that does for me, it with each class being at least 50 to 55 people, it gives us an opportunity to stave off the attrition rate, which is about 3 to 4 officers a month, and add officers on top of that to our force. Unfortunately, we're not going to benefit from that until probably starting next summer because of just starting the police academy. We have one that was scheduled to start in September, one in February, and another one a year from now, sometime around the first couple of weeks of July or so. So we'll start to see the benefits of this recruiting push probably next year at this time as those officers finish the academy and complete the field training program. Now, in the meantime, I understand that I can't sit around and wait the whole year for new officers to come on board. So I've been looking at ways to reorganize the department, consolidate units, and also look at some of the services that we provide where that we're not going to be able to provide anymore or get other people to do it that are not necessarily sworn officers, thereby freeing up the existing staff to be more proactive. And I use the word proactive with emphasis because that's what we have to become in order to have any impact on reducing violent crime in Oakland.
Well, I've read where you're pulling some of the problem-solving officers out of their beat duties to try and buttress patrols and reduce response time. And I ought to mention response time is now about 17 minutes in Oakland, which is 10 minutes more than one finds in comparable cities.
Yes, that is true. We're looking at we are doing that. I need to have – right now the department is very reactive, and we had a period of time last year when we had – the same number of officers, but because they were used in other areas, we were able to have some impact on reducing violent crime. So, and then, you know, we look at some of the help we received from the feds. So we want to supplement a lot of the proactive work that needs to be done with either our own units and seeking more assistance from the federal government, and they have been very responsive to our requests.
Can they help you with this radio system? I should mention, for the listeners, there have been so many glitches that officers say they have trouble even talking to each other with the radio system.
Yeah, and you know, and first and foremost, you know, my officer's safety is of paramount importance. I want my officers to have the best equipment available to them when they're working, especially in a time of need. Unfortunately, right now, my staff does not have the confidence in the radio system. The city has done a great job of trying to identify where the problem is. I think we're come to a resolution here shortly that I think will give the city and the citizens some satisfaction that the problem will be resolved.
You've got more burglaries, though, Chief, in the hills and in other parts of Oakland, and some think it's a result of all the emphasis on the 100-block hotspot, and you don't see that connection.
Well, you know, the 100-block really did not include any parts of the hill, so I really can't give that credit. I think the fact that we've captured a number of burglaries in the hills or wherever, I think we just caught three people yesterday in the flatlands. I think it's really a credit to the community and their efforts to step up and become more vigilant, the use of technology, partnering with some of our private industry folks, so public-private partnership that has heightened the awareness. Obviously, the media attention helps because people really focused on, you know, one, doing whatever they can to prevent their homes from being burglarized, and two, reporting suspicious activities to the police department and, you know, using their technology such as camera phones, smartphones to provide us with very good descriptions of people they suspect are doing wrongdoings in their community.
But is the 100-block program really successful? I mean, you have Councilman Larry Reed saying it's unsustainable, major crime numbers are up. Councilman De La Fuente says the numbers show really that it is not successful, and even some of the numbers have been questioned as being accurate or for inaccuracy. You do feel it's a success, though, don't you?
Yeah, we've had some marginal success in some areas in the city, but I want to just reemphasize that the 100-block is just a portion of our crime reduction plan. Obviously, we look at crime as it ebbs and flows throughout the city, regardless of where it is. And our responsibility is to respond to crime trends or patterns regardless of where they're occurring. So we're not restricted by the boundaries of the 100 blocks.
I want to actually get some callers on, but we're right up against a break here. Can you stay for a few minutes while we go through a break and then just take a couple calls?
I can probably stay till about 9:32 or so, because I have to walk over to my next appointment.
Well, we'll try to. We have somebody named Russ on. Let me just get Russ on here, and then you can respond to him after we go to our break, because we have to go to the break next in just seconds here. Russ, go ahead.
Hi. I live in Berkeley, but I do a lot of business in Oakland, and a lot of my friends live in Oakland. There's a big elephant in the room here that nobody's talking about in terms of crime in Oakland. And that's a dysfunctional police force that's been out of compliance with court orders for many, many years now, and a police union that, rather than pay contributions to pensions and health care like most of the taxpayers do at about the same levels, they would rather have fewer police officers on the street.
We're at the break point. Chief Jordan, if you'll be kind enough to wait, I'll have you respond to Russ when we return on Forum. This is Forum. I'm Michael Krasny. We've been talking about violence in Oakland, and Chief Howard Jordan with us on the line here. He's just got about a minute left with us. Chief of Police for the Oakland Police Department. Chief, you heard Russ's concern about what he called the elephant in the room, dysfunctional police, and the Ryder case and so forth. Response from you.
I did. But first, I want to correct the record that he mentioned about the union not giving into not paying their pension and benefits. So last year, the union did agree to pay 9%, which is standard for most police departments, in concessions. That alone allowed the city to rehire about 40 officers that were laid off the previous year. So the union has done their part to contribute to increasing the staffing here in Oakland. So I'm not sure where Russ got his information from. I just want to make the record clear on that. As far as dysfunctional in the department, we don't believe that the department is dysfunctional. We have challenges. And part of the agreement that we made with the, in the Writers case requires us to do certain things. These are tasks that we, the police department, the city, agreed to do, and we just have not been able to complete them. We have completed the majority of them. We are very close in terms of finishing the job, and I feel very confident that given the opportunity and the chance to demonstrate good constitutional policing, which is what I'm driving my officers to do, that this department will respond and has responded in terms of providing police services to the city of Oakland. I make no excuses about the past. The past is the past for me. I'm looking into the future and looking forward to addressing some of the concerns and making the police department one of the premier law enforcement agencies in the nation. And that's my job, and that's my goal I drive my agenda forward.
A lofty ambition, and I wish you much success with that, and thank you so much for joining us on Forum this morning.
Thank you, sir.
That's Howard Jordan, who's Chief of Police of the Oakland Police Department. And the city of Oakland has, as I've said, suffered a spate of violence, including 7 people killed in just 7 days earlier this month. We're discussing really ways to combat the violence. Speaking with the Oakland Police Chief, we spoke earlier with Tamerlan Drummond, columnist for the Oakland Tribune. And Junius Williams is with us, CEO of Urban Strategies Council in Oakland. And so is Brenda Grisham, who's here in studio, Executive Director of the Christopher Lavelle Jones Foundation. It was a foundation established in honor of her son, who was killed back in 2010 in Oakland, and we wanted to put a human face on this. And Brenda Grisham, so good to have you here with us. Thank you for being with us.
Thank you.
And I want to say that when I read about the death of your son, Chris, who was, we should mention, murdered in front of you and your 2 daughters, his 2 sisters, this was just such an extraordinary young boy. I mean, it was so tragic. He was on his way to college. He was musically gifted. Everybody that spoke about him said he was a wonderful young man, nothing to do with gangs and so forth. And now you're keeping this legacy by your own work. What needs to be done in Oakland, as you see?
In Oakland, there's a lot that needs to be done. There's just not one thing that's going to solve the problems. But we have to collectively get together and not just make it the, just the police's mission to save our children. We have to get out there and assist them because these are our children. They're not our children's babysitters. And I say our children because these young men are part of my family also.
Well, tell us about your child. I mean, your child was gunned down and murdered. Tell us about what happened.
We were actually going to get something to eat. Because we had to go to church. Christopher was the musician for all of my choirs. And everybody wanted something different. So I said, okay, we're all going to get in the car and I'm going to take him to Burger King. The girls wanted Hong Kong Kitchen. In the course of that, there were 2 hooded young men standing across the street. I saw them. You know, they were talking to each other. I got in the car. Christopher walked across the porch. He got in the car, put my granddaughter's car seat in the car. My 5-month-old granddaughter was there also. He went back into the house. So they weren't after Christopher because they could have shot Christopher a long time ago. Then Christopher came back to the car and we were sitting in the car and he handed me my keys. And when I looked up, I saw a young man lift a rifle and start shooting. Now, they shot my daughter first because my daughter was standing outside the car. So they shot my daughter first. And I told the kids to run. My youngest daughter had just locked the door and she was able to open the door and get my oldest daughter in the house. Whereas Mr. Christopher, he wasn't going to leave mommy outside because I was in the line of fire. Christopher was not. But Christopher was 6 feet tall and I'm 4'2". Instead of Christopher running, Christopher stood there. He called out my name. When I pushed Christopher on the porch, he was already hit.
Your daughter was wounded too? Or?
Yes, my daughter. Yes, she still carries the bullets. They weren't able to get the bullets out of her foot.
And there was no targeting here. There was just random street violence, and you're not even in the line, the hotspot.
Oh no, this is really my first. You know, I've never seen anybody killed. I've never seen anybody breaking anybody's house. I've never seen anybody, you know, getting beat up. I've been fortunate not to be in those type of areas, even though it does exist. I'm not, you know, immune to say that it's not there. I just never had been in that type of situation. From the reports, they were targeting a car that was parked in front of my house, and whoever was driving that car, they were after them. They just so happened to be blocking my driveway and went in a different house.
And your pursuit of justice for your son, I mean, you talked to the mayor, you talked to city officials and the police, obviously.
Oh, yeah. Talked to the police
often. What kind
of
response did you get?
They're doing their job. In my case, I can honestly say that they're doing their job in seeking justice for my son. They do have, you know, challenges as far as getting assailants charged with my son's murder. But I feel that they're doing a great job as far as Christopher is concerned.
And at this point, what would you say to, like, rally the people in your community to come together? And what would you want them to forge forward with in terms of the spirit of not only finding justice for your son, but finding a way to make Oakland more safe?
Well, you know, actually, the people in Oakland do want to see this happen. They just really don't see how they can fit into what's going on because it's so political, and saving lives is not always political. You can't go to a card game to play spades and there's no spades in the deck. It's not going to work. No way, no how. Somebody's going to lose. And it's just not one pinpoint.
You mean it has
finger.
To be personal more than
right.
Political.
It has to be. You have to bring some personal things into it on both ends. These parents need to step up and understand it started in your house. You did something and you're just turning a blind eye. You need to grab them kids back and just not make it everybody else's fault.
You become an activist. You've been involved in a lot of meetings. You start a foundation. Do you feel your voice is being heard?
It actually is. I actually, on last weekend, was a great weekend in Oakland. An organization from Los Angeles, friends of mine from the Silver Lining of Hope, came up. And we stood on the corner of 73rd and International Boulevard and gave out what's called Ribbon of Awareness. And it's a black ribbon with a silver lining in the middle. And we actually gave out 3,000 ribbons within 2 hours. That means we talked to 3,000 people. It was about 30 of us from different churches, different organizations, and we stood on those four corners and we actually handed these and told them what they were for, and we handed out leaflets with Crime Stoppers numbers, a number to the police, local churches, and pamphlets for local activities that are going on.
Most of these people are what we would call part of the choir, aren't they? I mean, the people that you have to reach are not necessarily the people who are wearing those ribbons, or
well,
are
these
they?
People, yeah. Yeah.
Talking about the violent kind of young people on the streets.
We had some young men that walked, you know, had the dreads and the pants hanging down, the hoodies, you know, a few people that, you know, clearly had been to a party the day before. But what we did was we had took the time to talk to them. I talked to a few young men, you know, this is not the way to go. And you have to do that. You got to put your foot in, because if you don't, nothing is never going to change.
And your foundation is doing this on a regular basis? You're talking to young people?
Oh, yeah. I'm always doing something.
Well, I congratulate you for the work you're doing. And we're going to bring more callers into this. We're talking with Brenda Grisham, executive director now of the Christopher Lavelle Jones Foundation, a foundation in honor of her son who was killed in 2010 in Oakland. We also have Junius Williams Jr. on, CEO of the Urban Strategies Council in Oakland. And let's go to our callers. And we welcome actually a caller from San Jose. Carlos, join us.
Yes, good morning. Thanks for taking my call. There's no doubting anyone's mind here in the Bay Area that the situation in Oakland is quite complex. But there is a series of items that I just haven't heard yet, and it is that the reasons why a lot of this is going on is because not only the poverty levels that are in Oakland, but as well as the lack of resources, obviously, from the police, the drug enforcement agency, as well as the lack of resources and the cut on budget that has been done into the education, where people from gangs and drugs, cartels, take advantage of all these kids that, you know, drop out of high school or college, and they have no jobs, and so they start looking for ways to making money. And Billy, I believe we know, I personally have seen people on the streets in Oakland, in corners, on daylight, selling drugs, and I don't see the police doing anything about it. Well, I'm sure they know about it. So why are we getting ourselves blind to the fact that something much more needs to be done, and having all these people, all these agencies, not only just the police, but everybody involved in this together, sitting down and attacking this as a whole instead of separate ways, and really putting, you know, all the political parties aside and doing what is right for the people in Oakland.
Well, Carlos, I appreciate your comments. In fact, let me go back to Junius Williams on this. Certainly the community in Oakland and the police are well aware of the drug problems there. It's just combating them and finding ways to go at the problem directly. Wouldn't you say, Junius Williams?
Right. And I think part of this notion about having a comprehensive plan goes to the reality that, and the chief has said this himself, that we're not going to police our way out of this, that part of what is happening relates to some systemic problems that we need to attack. One that Carlos cited was school failure. I mean, we've got so many young people that we have failed educationally, who have dropped out of school, who've gotten into the life. So one important long-term strategy is how we are able to support kids to be successful in school, to graduate and be on paths to careers or post-secondary education so that they can get into the economy, get sustainable quality jobs, and sort of realize parts of the American dream. There's a lot of work going on in the school district around improving outcomes for students in the school district and really upping the graduation rate. So that's an important element. There's also just the economic development in the city. Part of the way you stimulate jobs to give people options away from the street life is having a robust economy in the city. And obviously, it's a problem all over the nation, but we need to do more in terms of creating economic opportunities so that when young people are successful, in terms of their education, their opportunities for them in the economy. But I also want to point out one other thing, which is the issue of how long this has been going on, and not only the street violence that gets the most attention in terms of shootings and homicides, but all of the forms of violence and the trauma that so many young people experience. We've got a severe mental health problem in terms of large, wide-scale exposure of all of our kids and young people to trauma. And whether it's domestic violence or abuse in the home or having witness incidents in the neighborhood or community. So we've got a tremendous mental health problem that we need to deal with as part of the long-term solution to, you know, preventing and reducing violence within this community.
Well, when you talk about comprehensive plans and long-term solutions and going after the mental health problem and unemployment and so forth, it comes down in many people's minds to a more immediate and short-term almost triage of getting more police out on the streets, doesn't it?
Yeah, and that goes back to this comprehensive notion. During Mayor Dellum's administration, there was a plan developed, and it had the acronym PIES, and I think it's really instructive. PIES stood for Prevention, Intervention, Enforcement, and Sustainability, and it recognized that a comprehensive plan has all of those elements in it, that some of these structural problems around economics and education and stuff are part of it, enforcement's part of it, how we sustain as a community those things that are working, how we intervene effectively in the lives of folks who are at high risk of violence. But I also want to, if I could, just mention one other thing, which is we've talked a lot about the city's responsibility. We know from some of the research that about half of the victims and perpetrators of violence, of homicides in the city of Oakland are on probation and parole. Probation is under the control of Alameda County and obviously parole of the state. So they've got some responsibilities as well in this in terms of making sure that folks are reentering the community from incarceration, be it juvenile or adult incarceration, are getting the kind of services and supports that they need to successfully reintegrate into the community.
Well, I think our next caller may be right on point here. Dan, you wanted to talk about recidivism programs?
Yes, I appreciate the last comment. In addition to bringing our police force back up to 800 and hiring more investigators and maybe civilianizing some of the administrative functions as other cities have done, the centerpiece of any comprehensive public safety plan really needs to be an intensive investment in effective anti-recidivism programs. I mean, I ask the question often, who commits the most crime? And the answer is people who have committed crimes before. If we don't invest in more anti-recidivism programs, we'll never be able to play catch-up. We need the city of Oakland, the largest city in the county, the most crime in the county, needs to be a better partner with the county. We need to invest in anti-violence programs for offenders, high school and community college courses, either in the jails or as a condition of probation, job training, drug rehab. We have to really focus additional investments at the city and county level in effective anti-recidivism programs. I live in North Oakland. I'm involved in city affairs. I think we need to really be more active in dealing with recidivism.
All right, Dan, I thank you for that. And let me go back to Brenda Grisham, who's here with us in studio, executive director of the Christopher Lavelle Jones Foundation. And now you've been involved since your son's death. You've established a foundation. You've done a lot of work as an activist. Where do you think the emphasis most needs to be? Social programs, unemployment, more police? What would you like to see particularly?
It's going to have to be a circle. We can't just pick one.
But if you're going to have to pay more attention,
the police. Know,
limited resources.
The police.
Police, yeah.
Yeah.
Okay. I want to actually read some emails from some of our listeners. Here's Max who writes, the originally released low-resolution map of the 100 blocks quite clearly includes my neighborhood in West Oakland. I've seen no change. There's an open-air drug market every day in front of two beat-down hotels on San Pablo at Grand. It's been there for years. I can't drive up San Pablo without getting soliciting winks and waves from sex workers on at least one or two corners. The mayor promised more non-police services to the 100 blocks. There are piles of garbage. The streets were repaved months ago, but nobody came back to repaint the stripes. This wouldn't fly in Montclair or Rockridge. The mayor's plan was a PR plan, and when hill dwellers who vote and donate to campaigns didn't like it, the result was nothing actually happened. Sometimes I think my block is a free zone set aside by the OPD to contain undesirable behavior, and nothing will change until we elect a few new council members who make public safety a true priority and who are willing to band together to pass legislation over the objections of our incompetent mayor. Another listener writes on our website, Oakland Hill residents, hire more cops and it's fine to raise my taxes. Fundamental role of government is to provide safety. Finally, occupy Oakland, stay out of our city, go to Piedmont instead. That's where the 1% live. Another web comment writes, I lived in Oakland for 8+ years and now live in a much better area. I was woke up by gunshots, barking dogs constantly, saw people pushing bodies on grocery carts at 3 a.m., had a stun gun pulled on me, surrounded by 4-6 foot plus tall thugs and threatened by my neighbor at 2 a.m. when I confronted them about loud music. And one thing that I'd suggest focusing on is reducing environmental stress in neighborhoods. Focus on loud music, barking dogs, and other environmental stresses, even if it's within a loud time frame. Remind people to be aware their actions influence others and stress. Here's Doug from Concord, who writes by email, I have a long-held assumption that the illegal drug trade was the reason for most of the gun violence in our nation. My reasoning is that a person dealing in drugs needs to carry a gun to protect his business. Is there any hard evidence to support this assumption? In my mind, our nation is long past the time to realize that the war on drugs is a failure. And we've got the next caller, and let's go to the next caller, and that's Tom. Hi, Tom.
Yes, good morning. I'm actually calling you from New Mexico. I'm a faculty member at the University of New Mexico in peace studies and community justice. And I think a lot of your callers are really hinting on some of the issues. First of all, looking to the criminal justice system to solve social issues such as crime. I mean, don't we have enough evidence to suggest that, you know, that might be the wrong direction to look? And secondly, some of your callers have talked about the roles of community. And I don't think we've done a very good job in the justice system of crafting roles for communities, both in prevention and responding to crimes. And I think until we begin to put the community at the center of the issue and make them co-responsible, I don't think we can police our way out. You know, correctional systems don't correct. And we've got to move away from not so much the constitutional issues, but the adversarial nature of the system, which is pervasive. It extends well beyond the courtroom, and we've heard it from some of your listeners.
Well, we've also heard it from Brendan Grisham here in studio. I mean, the community, again, needs to really come together here. That's what
you're going to emphasize. Well, and we have to redefine what we mean by collaboration. On a good day, the criminal justice system cooperates. But to call it collaboration, it really is an injustice in and of itself. So, good show, Michael. I think there's lots of issues being raised, but until we begin to redefine success and begin to see the impact of the quality of life issues that your last caller spoke about, too. Do we have ways of responding like restorative justice to quality of life issues that then bleed into larger criminal types of issues as well? So,
well, I thank you, Tom, for that call. And let me go back to you on this, Brenda Grisham. I mean, what do you foresee in terms of ways to bring the community back together? You talk about 3,000 people wearing strips on them and that sort of thing, and this rallies a kind of concern, I realize, but getting the word out through the neighborhoods is really the big thing, isn't it?
Yeah, and the downside to everything is that nobody wants to work together. Everybody wants to be that one person that maybe has a solution. That's not going to work either. I attend 3 or 4 events a week. Why? We should collaborate on that end. If you're going to be a community activity is for the whole community, not this community on this end, this community. And until people stop seeing dollars in trying to solve the violence, we're going to have a hard way to go.
Let me bring Gus on. Gus from Oakland. Hi.
Hi, this is Doug.
Oh, I'm sorry. I thought it was Gus. Forgive
me. That's okay. Good morning. I live in East Oakland, and a few summers ago, our house was broken into. My office in West Oakland was broken into. I was almost carjacked at gunpoint right next to Lake Merritt with my one-year-old baby in the car at 10 a.m. on a Saturday morning. And then we had 4 shootings on our block, one of them by OPD. We have a gang on our block. And my question to your guests is, things have very much quieted down on our block since the gang injunction passed in the Fruitvale area. And I don't know if that's why, and so I'm wondering if you feel the gang injunction has actually helped with some of the problems that we're facing in Oakland. Thank you.
Okay, thank you for the question. Junius Williams, we'll go to you on this.
Well, I'm not sure that they do and at what expense. I've not seen the evidence yet, and that's a good question. We spent a lot of money in legal fees as a community to put in place the 2 gang injunctions, and I guess one of the questions we should be answering before moving forward is, what's the result of having made those investments in North Oakland and the Fruitvale gang injunction?
Well, excuse me, Junius, I'm looking at an email here from a listener in Oakland named Christine. It says, we should implement gang injunctions. John Russo, former city attorney, and former Chief Batts both endorsed the plan, and the mayor fought strenuously against it. I think that is pretty much the way things went down.
Yeah, but there's nationally a question about how effective they are and whether or not, since they target people who are already under the supervision of the parole department or the probation department, whether or not there's a more effective way by calling them in and making the terms of their probation or parole that they not associate or not be in certain neighborhoods. But as I say, with all of the what we're doing, one of the issues that we've got to deal with as a community of what works and doesn't work and what's the evidence so that we do things that yield results and we stop doing things that use our scarce resources but aren't producing results.
Well, let me thank the caller, and before we say goodbye to our guests, Brenda Grisham, you should know a lot of listeners are writing very enthusiastically about things they're hearing from you. This is Andrea, who says, I really like what I'm hearing from Brenda Grisham about parents taking real responsibility for what some of their kids are doing on the street. The kind of violence that's happening is horrific, something I'd expect in Sarajevo or Sierra Leone, and the simple message of taking responsibility and stop making it everybody else's problem is too often being shouted down in the black community. I'm reminded of Bill Cosby years ago saying some very similar things and being vilified. Thank you, Brenda Grisham. Well, we've come to the end of the hour, and we'll hope for better times in Oakland and certainly an abatement and diminution of the violence. I want to thank those who joined us on the program. First, you, our listeners, but of course, all of our guests, Tamara Lynn Drummond from the Oakland Tribune and Howard Jordan, chief of police, Junius Williams from the Urban Strategies Council, and Brenda Grisham from the Christopher Lavelle Jones Foundation. Thank you, our listeners, again. We wouldn't be here without you. Forum is produced by Judy Campbell, Amanda Stupai, and Vinnie Tong. Our senior editor is Dan Zoll. Our engineer this morning is Danny Bringer. Our interns are Esal Asanapur, Jessica Chung, Emily Holtzman, Shelby Pope, and Joshua Rafeman. And I'm Michael Krasny.
Funds for the production of Forum are provided by the members of KQED Public Radio, the Germanicos Foundation, and the Generosity Foundation in honor of Louise and Claude Rosenberg, and by a generous gift from Jan Schrem and Maria Minetti Schrem, owners of Clos Pegase Winery, who believe that all people deserve access to education, information, and culture for a lifetime of exploration and learning.